Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algie, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy. Hey folks, this is episode number 183, and this week we have Chris Henderson from Three Doors Down on. And when I say we, it's going to be me and my friend Matt Camp. Matt was kind enough to hook me up with contact information for Chris, so Matt and I did a quick little interview, and Dennis jumped in for a little bit, talked about one topic, and then headed on about his way because he had some business to tend to, and Bill was chauffeur to the stars. Speaking of the stars, how was that?
How was the chauffeuring part?
how was the chauffeuring? How was the show?
Well,
you missed the show.
I missed the show. The chauffeuring part was okay. I mean, I got a 15-passenger van for three dudes. And then they were like, where are we going to put our shit? And I'm like, let's see, you can each have three seats, and then you each have five seats. It's 15 passengers, and you can put your shit wherever. I mean, they literally had, like, one guy had two bags. The other guy has each had a bag each. I'm like, do you have, like, some other gear? No? Okay.
Is there an inflatable raft in your carry-on?
I'm looking around thinking, because a couple of years ago when we went to pick Blue Oyster Cult up, they came out and they had a keyboard case and a bunch of other stuff. And I'm like, if that happens, we're screwed. Cause when you rent a 15 passenger van, it's a 15 passenger van. You can't take the seats out. So you're kind of screwed. But anyway, it worked out okay. Brought them. So they came and landed at the worst time ever at the Indianapolis airport when it's busy. So it took us about an hour and a half to get back, dropped them off. And then picked them up in the morning and took some of them over to the venue, which is across the street, literally. Picked them up, took them over there, dropped them off. And
now, when you say across the street, is it across the street from your house, or is it across the street from where they were staying?
Across the street from the hotel.
Gotcha.
Like, walk to the corner and cross the street, and it's right there. It was literally 200 feet. Anyway,
it took longer to get in the van than to walk it
and drive around the corner. But anyway, they had gear, so they brought their back line. So he says, I just need to know where to go. So it was okay. Those guys were nice. The crew guys were really nice. So it wasn't a problem at all. And then buddy Steve hung out with them all day, or off and on all day. And then they went to the show, and he picked them up, took them over there, and then took them back. And then I took them back to the airport on Sunday morning. And that was pretty much the whole shenanigans. Lisa said it was okay. Every song was like an instrumental, had a long extended instrumental in it, and whatever, you know, it is what it is. Yeah. But it was Survivor was the band. We never talked about that, but Survivor was the band. Crowd was pretty good crowd from what I understand. So it was a hospice fundraiser, and they that's the biggest fundraiser they have all year. So they sell raffle tickets ahead of time. So the show is free, but the raffle tickets are $10. So, and you could win, I think, $10,000.
Mm. At least they had good songs for the, Survivor, Survivor.
And, oh yeah. We talked about that before, didn't we?
Cause with the Blue Oyster Cult here, you got Don't Fear the Reaper.
We have Don't Fear the Reaper. Now we have Survivor. Next year, I don't know. Grateful Dead. No, that's bad. I shouldn't say that.
Well, you can't say the Grateful Dead because Jerry Garcia has been gone for about 22 years.
That's right. Anyway, so next year, I'm not sure. I kind of think I was looking around earlier. I think Loverboy would be a good setup.
Yeah, that would be a good
next year would be pretty good, but because they have some pretty good songs and they still sound pretty good actually. Mm-hmm. So I think Survivor, the only original member left is the guitar player. So,
okay. Yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah. I think it's like, but the one guy is from Evansville or around that area. He's like the lead singer's 25. Yeah. He's like some real young dude. Just kind of crazy. I didn't meet him. So, but whatever. Anyway. Yep. That was my tour de stars. And then I told him whenever I was coming back, I said, are you going to the show tomorrow? Will you be? And I said, well, no, I've got another show I already have tickets for. Well, who is that? And I'm going to see Kiss. Never heard of them. I'm like, oh, yeah, well, okay.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Never heard of him.
Okay, funny man. Well, then the next day he was asking me about it and all that kind of stuff because he was like, yeah. Anyway. Yeah. But, yep. So there you go. That was my interaction with the stars.
Cool. Well, that's kind of cool.
Except for you two clowns that I was interacting with and other people at the
well, KISS we're only legends in our own mind.
That's true.
Well, I don't know. There's some people that actually like us. I keep seeing stuff on Facebook and things like that. I don't know what the hell they're looking at, but whatever. I'll take it.
Yeah, no kidding. I'll take it too.
Well, you want to talk about your vinyl real quick, Dennis?
Or yeah, sure.
Whatever that stack of stuff is you have.
I can do it real quick. Bill picked me up this from his, when he got his ginormous stack the other day, he got me one from his friend, and it was Candy O, the Cars. Really like that album. I went down to a book broker this weekend and got Loverboy. I think this is their first album.
That's the first one, yep. Yeah.
Mike Reno, he's about 98 pounds wet on this album cover. Now he's way past that.
But anyway, he's good album. 98 pounds.
Exactly. Yeah, plus some. I got another Cars album from Denver, Panorama. I had this on 8-track a long time ago, so it's a cool album. I hadn't heard it in years. Picked up a little AC/DC, Dirty Deeds Done Cheap. Dirt Cheap.
How much was it?
I got this one for $6.
Oh, that wasn't dirt cheap. I expect you to say it was dirt cheap. Dude, but I set it up. I set it up for you. For God's sakes, man.
Swinging a miss.
I'm not a big fan of this album, but it has Ride on it, and I love that song. So that's
it has Dirty Deeds on it.
Yeah, it's one of those I've heard that a million times. But this one here I got for $8.
Guess what? That's one of the songs the Hounds does.
And then AC/DC Power Age. My cousin had this on 8-track, and we used to drive around in his truck listening to this nonstop, and I hadn't heard it in years, so I do like this album a lot. Power Age has got some great tunes on it. So anyway, that's what I got.
$6 for AC/DC is not bad. It's never that cheap up here.
No, and that other one was $8. They have some. They had a lot of them. They had For Those About the Rock, which I just already purchased.
I like that one. Man, you have to think about your friend, you stingy ass.
No, they wanted 10 or 12 for that one, so I didn't. They figured you want that one, so no, I was gonna holler at you, but I knew they were a little bit more expensive.
Well, I got to tell you a quick funny vinyl story.
Sure.
So my dad calls me. He's asked me for my list of vinyl stuff because I keep a list of the things I want, so I don't like just so I have it.
Right.
And if somebody asks me, so I've sent him the list like 10 times because. Right. He loses it. He deletes it. He deletes all his pictures. He deletes his text messages, but he didn't delete his pictures. He has like 5,000 pictures on an iPhone 4.
Oh, geez.
That has like the memory of a gnat. Right. So he's like, I don't have any memory. Get rid of the photos, Dad. You got 14 photos of the same damn thing. Anyway, so I go through this thing. So I send him the list. He's going to this new record store that he read about in a magazine in Jacksonville. He calls me the next day. He goes, you're never gonna believe it. I went to this record store. They had an 8-foot long table of records, and it was a record store. And I said, "Must be a new record store." He goes, "No." I went in there, and the girl that was working, the girl that was working, I was like, "Huh?" He said, "Not that girls aren't bad, but if a woman was working, it'd be different. But it was a girl." So, I said, "So what's up?" And he goes, "Well, I asked if she had any." Like Motley Crue records or anything like that. And she goes, no, who? And we only sell indie records here. And he goes, what the hell is an indie record? It was a very interesting experience for him. Because he called me and goes, I don't even know what the hell they were talking about. I went to a new record store that only sells like new vinyl that is made by people that will never sell anything other than four that are in that record store.
Right.
Jesus. It was just kind of fun.
The store was probably in one of those bands too, you know.
Most likely. That's the only
she was probably in all of those bands.
She was, yeah, but unlike the back in the day, she probably didn't do anybody in the band. Right. Unlike back in the day. Yeah. Anyway.
Not the Lita Ford of indie music.
Ooh. No. Yeah.
Cool.
Anyway. I just thought that was kind of a funny story. Of course, she just didn't laugh. And so.
Yeah. Oh, it's funny. It is funny. I'm half asleep. It's funny.
I bored you.
I mean, all right. So, we unbored. So
hey, Jeff, wake up.
Yeah, no shit. Hell, I'm almost asleep.
Is he still listening? I haven't heard from him for a while.
I haven't seen him on Facebook in quite a while.
I know. Yeah. I wonder if he's okay.
We'll have to do a little sleuthing this afternoon. Well, yeah. This evening, afternoon has already passed by now.
Somebody come up.
So, Bennis and Dill and Dallin, Dennis and Bill and Allen did a thing this weekend.
Yes, we did.
We all went to Indianapolis, or as my buddy Jeff likes to say, Noblesville.
Right.
To see Kiss. Before we went to see Kiss, though, we went to the Sleepy Bear Camping Ground, and we did some tailgating. And shout out to Brad Rusthoven for hanging out. And he was actually pretty cool. He was playing music out of the back of his car, and the theme of his music was bands who had opened for Kiss.
It was kind of cool. He had a theme. He has a theme for every one of his tailgates.
He had talked with me about that. Because, all my radio shows have some kind of theme or whatever. So he pointed that out, that not only did I do themes, but he did as well.
Right. Yeah, he had a thing for Iron Maiden. I don't remember what the thing about Iron Maiden. It may have been the same thing, bands that opened for Iron Maiden or something. I don't remember what it was.
That I don't know.
But it was interesting. But, no, it was a good time. The weather was beautiful. It was a great night.
That light little bit of sprinkling we got was refreshing.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. It was a packed house.
So. I really thought it was refreshing. It didn't bother me at all.
Yeah, it didn't bother me. Bill's, well, I would. Should we tell him he's muted or not? He's still muted. Still can't
hear you. I had to mute because there's somebody, I can see somebody approaching our porch.
And is it a Jehovah's Witness or what?
It was somebody wanting money for something. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I thought
Brad's thing was pretty cool. He had those Marshall amp, those Marshall wireless speakers.
Mm-hmm.
He turned that up. Were you there when he had it turned up?
Oh yeah, he had it last week. He had it last week during Iron Maiden. They were blaring. I mean, they were loud.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
They sounded really good.
But no, it was a good time. Like I said, we all had lawn tickets, and we found a spot fairly center behind the reserved lawn area.
And I did not join them.
That's right. You were up on the corner. You came down one time.
Well, a friend of mine, I've known him. We worked in the library systems many, many years ago. And he told me he had bought four tickets because, you get the four-ticket pack and ask if I wanted one of those tickets. So I was like, yeah. I mean, I paid him for the ticket. I told him I didn't expect him to just give it away, so he begrudgingly took my money. Give me that.
Right.
Yeah.
No, but we were, as you're looking from the stage, we were literally under the three.
Okay. So
you had your sections, and you guys were right under the four.
Four, yeah. Right.
We were literally leaned up under the three, so we were as far back in the venue as you could get.
Oh, my gosh. Why back so far? Just because that's where you
wanted
to be?
That's where they wanted to be.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen them twice on the tour already, so I didn't care where I was in the venue.
That's true. But it's still kind of cool. The video screens were awesome.
Video screens are awesome.
The problem we had, though, was the video screens were
almost too big.
It was probably, I don't know how bad it was for you.
Yeah, they blocked the stage when you're in dead center.
Yeah, if you're not down, we need to be down further, about another 20, another 10 feet, because otherwise miss the top of the video screen, just the very top. Like,
well, that when Gene
see
went
the
up
pods for, very well at all.
Yeah, yeah, whenever
all you could see was his feet.
Right,
you could see his feet.
But it was a good spot. Sound, I tell you what,
so
that was the best.
If all you
sound
could see was his feet, they should make his little dragon boot sing.
There you go.
That would be good. That would be awesome.
It was the best sounding show of the three shows that I've seen on this tour. I thought it was a really good show as far as sound-wise. It was loud, finally. You know, the other two shows I was complaining about, man, they just don't have this thing loud enough. And it was loud, but it was clear.
I thought it was really clear, though. Yeah, it was really, it wasn't muffled or anything. It was really clear.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
Yeah. Okay, so I have a question.
Sure.
Is Paul lip-syncing or not?
Yes.
All right. Here's the thing.
Wait a minute. Why do you think he is?
I'll send you guys a link after the show, and that will explain all you need to know.
Here's my thing: is he's not lip syncing all the time. There are spots in there that it sounds different. And Max used to do this little cartoon character. He used to, every time we would go out to eat, he'd get a toothpick and he put it in his mouth, and it was a Bugs Bunny cartoon, but it was a little guy, and he goes, "I don't know how you did it, but you did it." And that's the way I feel about this thing here. I don't know what they're doing or how they're doing it, But there are some times in there that Paul's voice sounds too good, because it goes from really good for a couple lines, and then it's back to the kind of horsey thing. He seemed like this one here, he was singing a lot more on his own, because there was some spots that were a little bit rough, and that's fine. You know, I don't have a problem with that. But there's just a couple of moments in that show where it just didn't sound right. But I watch his fucking lips. I watch him.
That's why I'm asking the question.
And we had that big screen, and every time they sing, you know, I'm watching every nuance. I'm looking for him to fuck up, and I don't see it.
You know, I just don't see how you could. I don't see how you could be lip syncing and it be matched that close every night when you're up there moving around. And I really paid attention, because I'd seen this show two other times, but I really, really concentrated on, I want to catch him, damn it. I'm going to catch him. I don't disagree with you. I think he was getting help here and there. I mean, I definitely think that, but
I think the screams are
his, because they sound like shit. So
no, but there was a couple that were a little bit ones, and there's, I'm trying to think of the couple songs that seem like the very first of the song is just too damn clear and or too perfect. You know what I'm saying? He intros the song and he's hoarse, you know, you could tell he's hoarse, then all of a sudden it's great. And it could be a fact of, it's maybe like something that's intertwined with his guitar, kind of in, where it just kind of smooths his voice out, and he gets kind of punches it in. They punch it in and out in spots. That's what I'm thinking it is, something like that.
Yeah, can't figure it out. I don't either. It just doesn't look like he's – it looks a lot like he's sinking. I mean, yeah. Singing.
Yeah, oh, I agree with you. I could.
I meant to say singing.
I did the same thing you did, because I'm like, you know, I know how you. I know you're doing something that points, but I don't know how they're pulling it off. So anyway, we're.
I'm gonna go on record and say that was the best Freudian slip ever.
Yeah, it was definitely. It was. I mean, I think he's getting help for sure. I just don't know. I mean.
But I'll tell you one thing about that show, and we looked at each other at one point, and we did the same thing. And I'm telling you what, Gene's voice, not only is it at the top of his game right now, he's changing the way he's singing now, the nuances of words and the way he's doing stuff, and it sounds fucking cool. He was doing some shit. I looked at you, and I was like, did you just see that? We're pointing at his mouth and at Gene, you know? And it's like going, man, yep. He just fucking tore that up, you know? And it's just, he's at the top of it. Here he just turned 70, and a motherfucker's at the top of his game. You know, he sounds good. He was unbelievable.
Yeah, Tommy's playing great. He definitely changed stuff. It was. I thought it was like, I've never heard him sing. I've never heard him sing that way before.
Yeah, it kind of nuanced the way he knew. Way he was.
Where he pronounced some of the words. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
and he was singing it sometimes. You know, not just that growl and that.
What do you want to bet that he is intentionally changing those nuances so that when people sync these shows up night after night, you can hear Gene sounds different, but Paul sounds the same?
Possibly.
No, I don't know. Maybe, yeah.
I don't. Maybe he's
yeah,
just.
Yeah, who knows? It's maybe possible.
He's tired of singing it the same way.
I don't know.
Way.
Really, to be honest with you, in the end, I don't give a shit.
No.
So,
I don't think so.
It's just intriguing to me that. Well, the thing I was intrigued about was if he is lip syncing it, he's doing a really, really, really good job, because can't tell it. So, right. I mean, I watched the video and I'm like, I can hear it and there's not a delay. So,
well, and I went into this show knowing that, hey, you know what? This might be my last show. I'm going to have fun. I'm going to sing along with every song. You know, Max was there for his first show.
Yeah, I saw you singing that. I was made for loving you. I was going to go over and smack you.
The whole thing was, you know, Max was really into it, and he was having a good time, and I was telling, you know, and everything. The only bad thing about that whole show, and I'm going to bitch right now, I'm going to just absolutely throw a fucking tantrum. But you motherfuckers out
Andrew
there.
Andrew Luck is no longer in the Colts.
No, not
oh,
that.
Oh, wrong tantrum.
You people vaping can suck it.
You people with this fucking vapors, they need to go. You need to. That dude was about trying to blow one out of his ass by the other night, because I was going to rip it out of his hands and stick it in his ass. You don't need to sit there every 15 seconds and then beating Charlie Choo Choo and just blowing these great big clouds of smoke out. I hope he's fucking on a ventilator today. I hope his fucking lungs are just shot.
Oh, he will be. He may not be now, but he will be.
And that shit stinks so fucking bad. It's just the nastiest smelling
like pancakes,
crap.
Man. It smelled like maple syrup. Smelled like pancakes. I was like, I kept looking at it. Kept telling Alex, I think, can we go to IHOP when we get done? I feel like some pancakes.
Kelly and I both went home. Our throats were fucking sore. Not from singing and stuff, but that's that. My sinuses were all jacked up from that fucking smoke keep coming back and hit me. And there was him and some other jackass was about three down from him and over to the right doing the same thing. And I was like, God damn it. You know, you
don't worry. They're going to end up with cancer.
I hope so. I really do.
So, are you done ranting about the vape machines?
Yeah, I'm done. But yeah, right.
What was the highlight of the show for each of you?
A highlight?
Yeah, I have one specific highlight. I want to know what y'all's is.
Just seeing Max having a great time. You know, that was my highlight of the whole night. To be honest, the show like I said, the show was the best show I've seen on this circuit so far, and I really enjoyed it. But seeing Max enjoying it was really cool.
Fair.
Yep. Bill? I got two.
Okay.
Tell us.
On the drive there, Alex asked me if they were going to sing Beth. And I told him that, do you want to know or do you want to wait and be surprised? And he said, I'll just wait. I said, okay. So we get there and one of the people that was with us said, what's your favorite Kiss song? He said, oh, it doesn't matter. They're not going to play it anyway. When Eric Singer walked out, when that light came on and Eric was sitting at that piano, he was beside himself.
Cool.
Alex was. I had no idea that that was something that was that important to him. And he was, it was a really cool moment. And, so for me, that was it. Otherwise it was just it was a Kiss show, but being there with him, taking him to his first show by myself and taking him to what is probably his last show by myself. On the way out, he made a comment to me that really meant a lot to him, that
that's cool.
We were able to have that time together. So,
and you can't, you know, those are things you can't just do.
So I was like, it was cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
So
what about you?
My very first Kiss tour, my very first concert I ever got to see was on the Crazy Nights tour. So when they came out on the encore and did Crazy Nights, that, you know, I've only seen that song performed live once, and that was 32 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. That was my highlight.
Cool.
Didn't that do that before? They didn't do that at the other two shows?
No,
this is new. They started
Crazy Nights on the European leg. Honestly, I expected when they come back to the States that they would drop Crazy Nights because it was not as big in America as it was in Europe.
It was good to hear a different song.
It's still one of my favorite songs.
They're good about doing stuff in Europe and Japan that they don't do in America.
Right.
So,
yeah, if they'd have ripped out Shandy, that'd have been pretty freaking cool.
Well, we're not Australia, so there's no
fucking way. I know, but I just think it'd still be pretty freaking cool. Maybe on the boat. Maybe you'll get something like that on the boat, or you'll get the same 18 songs you just heard.
Well, we're going to find out.
Yep.
Exactly. So before I forget, I do want to give Jeff Humphrey a shout out for offering me that ticket, and it was good. I went to his house before the show, and we sat out on the back porch and kind of caught up on times and caught up on old times and shot the breeze a little bit. And then, then I headed to the campground, and the rest is Kistery.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, that was a good show. I hope they hit it. I will go if they come to Evansville, but that would be the only reason that I would go again. But just to go.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure they're coming. They're going
to
come there.
They're going to have to.
Lost Cities too. I keep preaching it.
I told that everybody. Time somebody says something, I'm like, yes. It's supposed to last 2 years. They're going to guilt every dime they can.
They're going to hoover up as many pennies as they can find.
That's exactly right.
But yeah, I will see them if they do come to Evansville. I will see.
Yeah, I'll come down for that show.
But other than that, I probably won't go anymore. And like I said, and if I don't, it ended on a really good note. You know, it was a great show.
I would agree.
And it's like, you know what? I'm going to quit while I'm ahead because all I got to do is just see one shitty show again.
Three shows later,
I know.
Here we are. But
I've seen three pretty good shows. You know, so I'm happy. So anyway.
Paul, Gene thanks you.
from the bottom of his pocketbook, right?
The bottom of your wallet, thank you. You guys ready for me to have my conversation with Chris?
Yeah, I can't wait to listen to that, man.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Chris Henderson of Three Doors Down. So what's going on in the world of Three Doors Down?
We just got off the road, man. We just did a kind of keep the lights on tour, if you will, just to kind of keep the employees employed and insurance, everything paid up for everybody. We didn't really do much this year because we're gearing up for the Better Life Foundation, which starts the actual concert's on the 7th of September, so next Saturday in Cherokee, North Carolina, but we're starting kind of the whole process on Thursday. So we have a week off before that, and then that'll be our last show for the year, because next year we're doing a big 20th anniversary tour. Better Life came out 20 years ago next year.
It's hard to believe 20 years has just gone that quick.
I know, man.
So what is the premise behind the Better Life Foundation?
The Better Life Foundation is it's a foundation that we started years ago. We played, people are always asking us to do benefit shows and, donate this, donate that. And we always do if we can. But we don't like to do, just give people money, because they don't always use it for what they say they're going to use it for, number one. And when you do charity shows for other people, everyone gets paid but the band, about 9 times out of 10, the vendors get paid, all the people that do the parking, everybody gets paid, but the bands do everything. The bands do it for free. And I'm not complaining about that. When I say everybody gets paid but the bands, I should also say everybody gets paid but the bands and the acts,
Yeah.
So we were a little disgusted when we started seeing kind of like the breakdown of the money that was brought in and money that goes out. And we were like, the only way we're going to be able to control this, and, if you're going to bitch, you got to be able to do something about it, right? So the only way we're going to, justify the complaining is to do something about it. So we start our own foundation. Once a year, we do our own concert. Everyone donates their time. Even the crew, our crew, doesn't get paid. The bands that play don't get paid. Every dollar that goes in goes out.
That's pretty epic. How long have you guys been doing that?
This is our 15th year. And we're able to drive the money where it's needed. And it started, with just like local charities, women and children's charities mainly, the Ronald McDonald House, things like that. There was a place in Mobile that had special needs children that were, they needed extra care. They couldn't be cared for at home, so they needed kind of professional round-the-clock care, A lot of them are in wheelchairs, and their families just couldn't give them the care that they needed 24/7. So they lived in a group home, and it was called the Mulholland Home. And we gave to that. That was the first charity we started working with, and it was pretty incredible. And it just grew from there, man. And now every year we raise $600,000-$700,000, and we're able to give to local church groups, and we can dictate. We can say, here's some money, but this is what we want to use it for. We don't want to just give it to the Red Cross or just give it to this guy or this guy or this guy. We want it to go, we're going to buy you 17 pallets of sheetrock. What kind of sheetrock do you need? And we're going to have it delivered. That's the kind of stuff that we do.
That's pretty cool. I wish more people would handle their matters that way.
I agree. It's amazing. It's amazing to see.
That's the only, I'm sorry to interrupt you. It's hard to do on this Skype. It's been our experience. That's the only way. If you're going to control it, you got to do it.
Go ahead, Matt.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just saying that I was agreeing with you that it's nice to see a rock band, be such, philanthropist and, really give back with the opportunity that's been given to them and not thinking solely about, how can this guitar playing and drumming and such just strictly benefit me.
Well, one of my trusty cohorts here, Dennis, has joined us.
How you doing? Sorry, I am in the midst of grilling chicken for a big event tonight, and I wanted to come in and talk to you for just a second. And, so thanks for being on the show. Question about Harper Guitars. Two of your cohorts have Harper Guitars, and actually Harper Guitars is 10 miles away from me in Boonville, Indiana. Okay. And he's actually making me a custom at the moment. And I was wanting to know, have you played any of those guitars? And Do you like them, or what's your thought on them?
I love them. I think they're great guitars. So Chet, our other guitar player, has two. He's got one.
At least one, maybe two. Yeah.
He's got two, and then he also has a like a tiny mandolin kind of guitar thing. It's like a really tiny little guitar mandolin. It's weird, but
right.
It's a Harper, and it sounds great, and the craftsmanship is incredible. And those guys really pay attention to detail, which is kind of cool. You know, this day and age, not a lot of people really. Yeah, they're trying to sell guitars versus, you know, making instruments, which is, it's nice to see guys really care about that. And they care about the musician. And then a good friend of mine, he played guitar for Uncle Cracker, Kevin McCreary. Sadly, he's passed away, but he was a Harper player as well. And he's the one who turned us on to Harper.
Yeah, it was one of those things I had been looking. I've got too many guitars already, but I always wanted something unique and special. And I just run across a Facebook thing, and I'm like, going, there is a guy in Boonville making guitars, and took a trip out there and hooked up with him. And I tell you what, he was halfway building a guitar that somebody backed out on. So, and I thought it was beautiful, so I'm buying it, and hopefully by October it'll be done. But I was just kind of curious, and I told him that we were going to be talking to you, and he's like going, he's like, man, I hope he says something good about it. Jason's a really good guy. Jason's a really good guy. Yeah, real good guy. So I'm glad to hear that, and I'm sure he'll be glad to hear that too. That's awesome. All right, Alan.
While I'm here, I'd like to talk some more about some of the USO stuff, past, present, and future. That's one of the things that I really, really love about Three Doors Down.
Okay, what do you want to know?
I guess I just kind of wondered, you know, what got you guys started in that. If I remember correctly, some of you guys have been in the military, and like what have been some of your favorite experiences?
Cut out pretty bad there, Matt.
You cut out.
Okay, well, you guys keep talking. I'm going to be parked in just a second.
Okay.
Well, Dennis has unjoined us. I guess that chicken's kind of, well, actually the chicken is kind of important because it's a fundraiser they got going on this weekend. So
that's pretty awesome. That's pretty awesome. Well, I'm glad I got to meet you. That was cool.
All right. Can you guys hear me okay?
It sounds like we can hear you now.
Oh, what I was saying is, in my recollection, some of the members of the band had been military, and I was just kind of wondering what started the ball rolling with all of the USO work, and what have been some of your favorite experiences and places that you've played so far?
Out of the guys in the band, I was the only one in the military.
Okay.
But Brad's dad was in the Air Force. My dad was in the Air Force. Todd's grandfather was in the Navy. And of course, you know, it just kind of rolls downhill from there. And, we've always been big supporters of law enforcement and, military especially. But, you know, it seemed to me like we were doing it when it needed to be done, when no one else was doing it. If you guys remember, the Gulf War, people weren't really happy about, you know, us being involved in that conflict. And you know what I mean? Like, a lot of people were complaining about it, and it wasn't cool back then. You know, when we started this band to thank someone for their service, it just wasn't cool. You know what I mean? And people laid the blame at the feet of the military. And, me serving in the military, I knew better than to buy that crap. I wasn't going to play that. And so when the opportunity came for us, what happened was we wrote the second record, Away From the Sun, and we did not a USO tour, but we did an MWR tour, which is Morale, Welfare, and Recreation is what it stands for. So it's the Department of the Military. And we got on a C-9 transport with the Navy, and we flew to where did we go first? We flew to Nova Scotia, and then we flew to Portugal and got on the USS George Washington and played on the deck while it was in port. And we took a camera crew with us, and the camera crew documented the kind of the trip. It was just not for any reason other than just to have a camera guy there documenting some of the cool stuff that we were going to be doing. And so he filmed that show, and just in passing, he put it to When I'm Gone, the music to When I'm Gone, because we had the music, we didn't have it. He kind of edited it all together. And it became the video. We'd already shot another video for that song. You can find it on YouTube in Canada and places like that, because obviously the military video wouldn't work overseas. You can still see the video that we did. But here in the States, it became, When I'm Gone became a military anthem because of that video. And, you know, the label came to us at a show. We were there. Auburn, Alabama, we were playing in Auburn at the college. And they showed us the cut, and they were like, what do you guys think? And, of course, we were fired up. We were completely fired up, ready to go. We were like, do it. Let's do it. And the label was like, hey, you know, think about this, because this is going to brand you as a military band. And that's what you're going to be from here on out. Are you guys okay with that? And we talked about it. The guys in the band talked about it. And I said to them, to those guys, you know, because I'd been there. And I was like, man, look, these guys aren't doing it for the money. You know, I can tell you that. They're not doing it for the money, and they don't make crap. So they're doing it for love of country, and we should be supporting them. And that was all that needed to be said. Boom, off we went, man. And we jumped in with both feet. And we've supported the military ever since, 100%.
Yeah, that's why I've told that to several of my friends. And, you know, I've got a hand of bands of, you know, that have been favorites of mine. Three Doors Down has always stayed in there. I've always loved the music. I remember that video that you're talking about like it was yesterday. And I actually just watched it again the other day. You know, I guess that's just always been one of the biggest selling points for me. And it, like you said, you can get branded and such like that, and it may or may not be good for business, and people may or not agree with what's going on with the military, but you can never take away from the fact of why the guys are there. You know, whether they agree or whether they're not, they're there to do a job, and you know, they deserve the utmost respect for that, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you saying that, man. Not everybody feels that way.
I was active duty during the first Gulf War, and I'd actually come from Germany back to the States and was on my way to my second duty assignment and stopped at a local college to hang out with some of my high school friends. And the Gulf War actually broke out while I was down there. And one of the girls I went to high school with was like, congratulations, warmonger, you got your way. And I'm like, I didn't ask for that damn war. You know, so I kind of had to give her a quick education. You know, I'm just a cog in the wheel. I am not the engine. I am not the brain. I'm just the idiot that signed the dotted line.
That's right. And you know, you make that decision beforehand. You make the decision to serve before anybody tells you to do anything, you know? So when they tell you, you can't be like, oh, I changed my mind. Nah, man, you made that decision months ago. It's time to go. It's you know, it's time to put your money where the mouth is, you know, where your mouth is. So it's good, man. Bless you for that.
The other thing that I definitely wanted to bring up is, like I said, I've been a fan for a long time, and we've been connected on Facebook for quite a while. And I just wanted to tell you, like, how amazed I am at the progress that I've seen with you and your physicality as well. Like, what brought on some of that? Like, your transformation has been phenomenal.
You know, I gotta say, probably it goes back to maybe 10 years ago. It was you know, I wasn't very healthy. I was wasn't sleeping very well. I wasn't, you know, really doing my job very well. I wasn't a very good band member. I wasn't a very good person. I wasn't a good husband or a father. I was kind of like, you know, kind of going through the motions of life, and you know, drinking heavily and doing other things heavily, a lot of it, and you know, basically going down a path of destruction, and you know, to a point where I had to go to treatment, and I went to treatment. And when I came out 30 days later from drugs and alcohol treatment, I woke up to the fact that it was more than just drugs and alcohol that I was addicted to. I was addicted to a lifestyle of trashing myself. And through waking up and doing some step work and kind of like talking to other people in the different programs and, you know, the AAs and the NAs and all those different things, you know, I realized that I had to do some other work in my life versus, you know, just not drinking beer, you know what I mean, or just not doing drugs. I had to do other work. I had to, like, figure out what the deal was with Chris. And so I did, man. And health was one of those things that I had to get straightened out. I had to learn, like, what it was I was doing wrong. And I had to figure it out a little bit at a time, make tons of mistakes. And I did, man. I wouldn't take no for an answer. And I started working on it. And I've changed my diet 1,000 times trying to find out what would work for me. And over the course of probably the last 7 years, I've lost 130 pounds.
That's unbelievable. That's amazing.
I've lost so much weight that I've got loose skin that I have to probably go have removed at some point. You know what I mean? Like I was so big, I was 287 pounds, and now I'm like 170 soaking wet, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Congratulations. That's one heck of a transformation.
It is.
It didn't happen overnight, man. It's a long game, man. It takes forever. And you just kind of forget that you're doing it. And, you know, for me, the reason I brought up addiction is because I kind of am cross addicted to health and working out at this point. And I think that it's a healthy addiction. It doesn't ruin my life. I'm able to do an hour and then come home and have a good day, you know? So before I was running marathons and, you know what I mean? Like not eating, going and cutting the grass and then, you know, doing 15 mile walks, getting on my bike, riding 26 miles, you know, it was just doing crazy amounts of exercise. And I was addicted to it in a destructive way. And so I had to kind of figure out that it's not okay to just be, you know, like I said before, don't drink beer and then do this, because it's six of one, half a dozen of another. It's all seats on the Titanic. The ship's still going down no matter where you're sitting. You know what I mean?
That is a very good comparison.
Well, I mean, when you're an addict, you have to look at red flags when they present themselves if you want to survive. And that's what I've learned to do. And, you know, I saw the red flags of, you know, being addicted to being healthy to the point where I was, you know, not healthy. So I was like, all right, let's rein this in, man. And with my wife's great. She's like, lets me do and lets me kind of do it. So it's cool, you know.
That's awesome. The other question I had, unless Adam wants to jump in, did you have anything else you want to ask? I don't want to dominate here.
You go ahead and ask another question, buddy. That's why you're on the show.
Just kind of curious about your gear these days, man. I've seen you with several guitars on some videos and live work and stuff like that. What do you feel like are your main guitars these days and amps?
I'm using RH Gibson Les Pauls, and I got a couple nice ones, and I'm also using the Piezo, the Hollow Body 2 PRSs, and I've got a couple of my signature single cuts out there, which are still really cool. I love those things. They don't make them anymore, which even makes them even more cooler to me. But those are my main guitars that I use on the road. And I used to carry 12 to 15 guitars and change every song. It was about the paint job and all this crap, and it wasn't really about how they sounded. But over the years, I've kind of just backed away from that, and it's all about presentation of sound at this point. So I feel like I'm playing smarter, not carrying as much gear, and I'm it's quality over quantity, and it's really a beautiful thing. It really is. So the Gibson Les Pauls are nice. The single cuts are basically, you know, different complement, you know, they both complement each other very well. So you can switch back and forth from PRS to Gibson, no problem, without devastating anything. It's not like, you know, some guys go from Fender to Gibson and it's just drastic change and they change everything. It's not like that. Everything kind of complements each other. And then I use the Piezos for acoustic tones.
That definitely keeps it simple. It's hard to carry all that stuff sometimes, I'm sure. You guys probably do a lot of flyout dates and stuff, so.
We do. So we use Kempers for that, because you can rent Kemper rigs and take a USB port with you. And, you know, over the years, since I've been playing music professionally since 1996.
Amazing.
Getting paid for it. And so I've collected several 100 amp heads. And with the Kemper, you can model each one of those things, right? And you can carry the exact amp head with you in a USB stick. It's magic. And, you know, I fought it for years and years and years, and went out on the road with Marshalls and, you know, Mesa Boogies and Hughes and Kettners and all these 5,000-pound heads and tubes busting and, you know, nothing working. It was just crazy. And I learned my lesson, man. I carry, you know, basically something this big.
I tell you what, I do sound on the weekends in this area for a lot of local bands, and they all drag out all their heavy amps and everything. And one of the venues here every once in a while hits my company up to help do stage production. And it is amazing, because almost every band that comes through does the same thing. They either have the Kemper, The Head Rush, that's another really good one. There are two or three ones that's all they use is modeling amps. There's no stage volume. There's no feedback. You know, it is just a beautiful thing. I wish I could get these local, you know, rock star wannabe guys to get that through their head.
if they were paying to ship their gear from city to city to city and country to country to country, they would. You know, because think about it, man. If you're a rock band and you've got everyone in the band's got an amp, I mean, that's $10,000 to get to, you know, you got to put it in a truck.
Yep.
You know, and now if you got to fly, you got to put it in a truck, $10,000 across the country to go play a show where you're probably only going to make $15,000 or $20,000. You know what I mean? So you've eat up half your profit shipping your stupid gear out there when you could have a USB stick.
Yeah, I traveled and played music the better part of the 90s, and man, you only have to play so many dates where you show up and pull your stuff out of the trailer only to find out that your tubes have been busted and you're walking onto stage with an amp that doesn't going to work, and you're trying to figure out how you're going to pull that show off in the next 10 minutes.
You end up borrowing somebody else's amp, and it's the worst show of your life.
Yeah, because you don't know what to expect from their gear, and you sound like shit, and it messes up. You get inside your head for the whole show.
Yep, got to sound good to play good, man. That's what they always say.
Yeah. I think that covers like the USO and the gear and all that. I think that kind of covers what I wanted to ask.
Cool, man.
Well, what does Three Doors Down have coming up?
We're doing a 20th anniversary tour, which is going to start next year. It's going to be the Better Life. We're going to play the full record from front to back, and then we're going to go back and play, you know, all the songs people that hear without use, and when I'm, you know. When I'm Gone and Away from the Suns, those kind of things. So it's going to be a pretty unique show that we've never done before. We're going to have to pull out some songs that we haven't played since we recorded them in 1999. But I think I remember them. I should be all right.
So, I'm sure you have the CD. You can get out and just listen to it.
I mean, yeah, right? We'll figure it out. We'll go back and relearn all that stuff. And it's going to be a lot of fun playing that old music for, you know, it's been, man, 20 years since we've played any of it and some of it, and it's going to be a lot of fun, man. And we're doing it with new guys too, because I mean, you guys know that our bass player and our guitar player are both new guys. The guys that we have, not they've been around 7 years, but they're not the same guys we wrote them songs with. So it's going to be nice to break them out and play them with new people, and you know, see what happens. It's going to be fun.
Right on. Well, we will be definitely looking to see you come around the area and hit those shows. I don't have anything else to say. ThreeDoorsDown.com is your website, correct?
Yes, sir. TheBetterLifeFoundation.org, if anybody wants to check that out.
TheBetterLifeFoundation.org. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, Chris, I appreciate your time. I will let you know this will come out on this coming Thursday, so I'll send you a link and everything. You'll have everything you need.
Perfect, man. Thank you.
All right, folks. Catch us on agesofrock.com. Check us out on Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio. Ages of Rock has all of our social media and all of that wonderful stuff. And until next time, peace out. Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.